Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher's 8:06 on this Thursday, March 18th. 30 degrees here in Old Town Park City. We've got some clouds, a little bit of blue sky on the phone with us from the ABC Forecast Center. Meteorologist Adam Carroll, good morning.
Good morning. Yeah, we're starting off partly to mostly cloudy, depending on your location, but temperatures are going to still end up here right around 50 degrees. So even with the clouds, which typically can hold back temperatures with a little bit of a southerly wind, that won't be the case today in around Park City. So we'll see that today. Tomorrow we'll be awaiting a cold front that will arrive late tomorrow. So before we get to that front, we'll be under mostly sunny to partly cloudy skies, breezy southerly winds, helping boost temperatures into the mid-50s here in Park City. And then late tomorrow, when we're talking late, we're talking a midnight or later for the arrival of the cold front. And when it arrives, it will drop temperatures like an anvil right behind it. So anything that might start off with a little bit of rain, snow for Park City will transition to snow here during the morning hours on Saturday. And we'll likely see maybe a couple inches here with the passage of the front with higher amounts in the mountains. But it will be an unsettled day, kind of a sloppy Saturday out there with a high of 40, but that should be an early high as temperatures will fall back into the 30s during the day. And then that way, that leads to Sunday needing to be more unsettled with some snow showers around at only 38. Quiet Monday, back into the 40s. Then another storm system arrives here on Tuesday, back into the 30s. But that looks like actually a colder storm, so it would be completely snow at that point with a few more inches expected in around Park City. But we'll keep this going, heading into the latter half of March into early April. Of course, spring as well is Saturday, so that's something else to look forward to as we start looking ahead towards the weekend.
Okay, Adam, thanks.
You bet.
And with a look in the backcountry and the fun with us from the Utah Avalanche Forecast Center, it's Mark. Good morning, Mark.
Good morning, Leslie. Overall, the danger is low today, but avalanche conditions can change as quickly as the weather does in the spring, and we all know how that goes. So the main thing today, just watch out if all of a sudden the snow just gets really unsupportable and wet, and that happens really fast, maybe a sign that you might start seeing some wet snow avalanches. But overall, the danger is low, and conditions are generally safe.
Okay. Thank you. KPCW News Time now, 8:08. Well, stay tuned. Coming up on the local news hour this morning, I'll be checking in with the CEO of the Park City Chamber Bureau, Jennifer Wesselhoff. Later on, Jana Dalton, Development Director for Youth Sports Alliance, will be in with more information about a new program that they're offering. And finally, the Director of Park City Film, Katie Wang, has an update on their reopening. Stay tuned.
We at KPCW couldn't ask for a more involved and generous community of listeners. Your support during our 2021 Winter Pledge Drive keeps our vital programming on the air. Through your generosity, we can continue to bring you the daily programs you've come to rely on, like the Local News Hour, the Local View, and our collection of informative public affairs shows. Thank you for stepping up in support of local community radio and for being a part of the KPCW family of listeners.
Thank you for being.
And don't forget to stay tuned for Cool Science Radio right after the local news hour. Today's guests are Neil deGrasse Tyson. He's written, of course, Cosmic Queries, Start Talk's Guide to Who We Are, How We Got Here, and Where We're Going, and building on the wisdom of the ancients and explaining the most significant science of today. He takes readers on a journey from past to future, punctuated with images portraying not only the universe, but also the key ideas that help us understand it. Then Jeff Hawkins, he's written the book, 1,000 Brains, A New Theory of Intelligence, shows a groundbreaking new theory of intelligence showing how the brain uses map-like structures to build a model of the world, not just one model, but hundreds of thousands. Again, all of that coming up on today's edition of Cool Science Radio at 9:06. Well, with a public hearing for the Park City Arts and Culture District scheduled for the end of the month, the Historic Park City Alliance has come out in opposition to Park City's possible use of funds from the additional resort city sales tax to help finance the project. KPCW's Sean Higgins has more.
The additional resort sales tax is a 1.6% tax on purchases made in Park City. Enacted in the late 2000s and expanded in 2013, its revenue is used to fund open space projects as well as street improvements in Old Town and Main Street. The tax brings in over $3 million in additional revenue annually. Late last month, the Park City City Council discussed the option of expanding the scope of the ARST to include the Arts and Culture District project. City Hall has made it clear that this would not be a tax increase, but would allow for the tax revenue to help cover some of the expected $100 million price tag for the project. The Arts and Culture District is currently funded in part by the city's transient room tax, which is added to lodging stays in the city of less than 30 consecutive days. At this week's Historic Park City Alliance board meeting, the business community in Old Town came out largely opposed to altering the scope of the ARST at all. Park City Manager Matt Dias told KPCW on Wednesday that since the tax is collected from all registered businesses in Park City, regardless of location, where the funds go is ultimately up to the mayor and city council to decide.
To be clear, it's a citywide sales tax. So that sales tax is drawn from, you know, every business, every licensed business in town that has some type of a sales tax transaction, irrespective of their location. So irrespective of whether they're located on Main Street or in the Prospector Square Business District or up on our ski mountains. So it's a citywide sales tax.
Some of the pushback from City Council on the Arts and Culture District has not necessarily been about the costs of the project, but rather what else the community could be doing with the money. Councilor Steve Joyce said the decision for him is all about opportunity cost and what the city could be potentially missing out on by tying up so much money in one large project. That sentiment is shared by the HPCA, said Executive Director Allison Kulo.
What we are pursuing is talking to City Council and letting them know our feelings and decision that we made yesterday with regards to the funds. I know that City Manager Dias had talked about, you know, the ability for Main Street to continue to receive funding from projects. But where I think the largest concern comes from is just that the way that they're proposing funding for the Arts and Culture District, it really does max out the bonding capacity of both the Resort City sales tax as well as the transient room tax for at least 9 years.
Despite the concern when it comes to what the ARST funding is being used for, Dias said the projects identified as priorities over the last decade could use a refresh. He said looking into diverting funds to other projects like the Arts and Culture District is part of the public input process.
Not that it's dormant or it's not relevant anymore, just think it needs a new set of eyes, a reprioritization, and probably a lot more work would go into that before we would explore some of the projects on it.
The city will be hosting two upcoming events on the Arts and Culture District, a community roundtable on March 29th and a full public hearing on March 31st. Sean Higgins, KPCW News.
KPCW News Time now, 8:15. Good morning, I'm Leslie Thatcher. It's the KPCW Local News Hour. Joining me now in the studio with a look back at the state legislature and a look ahead at the summer season, I have the CEO of the Park City Chamber Bureau, Jennifer Wesselhoff. Good morning.
Good morning. Thanks so much for having me.
Well, you've been on the job now 5 months or so. How's it going?
5 months. Yeah, I'm hitting the ground running.
Yeah. Settled in?
Working on it.
So are you and your staff working remotely or...?
Many of us are. There's a handful that come to the office every day. The office is open. Members and businesses can pick up materials. We're a distribution center for the county and the We're All in This Together campaign and masks. So people are coming in and out, but a lot of the work can be done remotely.
Yeah. So do you think it'll stay that way or will you get back eventually?
Our plan is to get back to eventually. I think, you know, it's so hard to build a culture and a team when you're all working remotely. So that's something that's really important to me as a leader of the organization is to have a really close-knit team. And yeah, I'd like to see us all back in the office at some point.
All right. Well, let's start with the state legislature. This was your first one in Utah. How did it go?
Fast. It's incredible how quickly the session moves. And that was new for me coming into this position. In fact, one of the things that we did is we created a legislative committee in order to have a sounding board of businesses to help me, mostly, since I'm so new, understand how quickly things move, to give input on bills, and that worked really well this year. So we're looking forward to continuing that, even now into the spring session, as work is being done throughout the year. We'll keep that committee active and I think we'll make some progress.
Yeah. Now, the state had a bunch of money. Did that fare well for the statewide marketing fund?
We did. We were able to get some money through the county, through the CARES Act, which was really helpful. I think, you know, one of the things that we were able to do that Bill did so well in the board before I got here was to put some money aside for a reserve fund in case of emergency, which for many organizations like ours is really hard to do. And we did. We had about $500,000 in a marketing reserve fund that we were able to pull over into this year's budget to really help shore up and build winter and be ready to hit the ground running for summer.
Yeah, but the state legislature also has some kind of annual marketing fund that's based on performance. Of course, last year cut a bit short, so I don't know how they balance that.
We didn't get our hands on too much of that. We were a little disappointed that we didn't have the opportunity to participate in a program that was designed for communities with convention centers. And although we don't have a convention center per se, we do have and rely on group business a lot. And unfortunately, we weren't able to participate in that program. But we are working really hard to get our hands on some additional resources for next year. You know, our fiscal year begins in July. So right now we're spending a lot of time looking back, what worked, what didn't work, what can we learn from the last year? And now also looking forward in terms of how do we plan and what do we need for the upcoming year to really help businesses when they're going to need us the most.
Yeah. So anything else out of the state legislature that you thought was noteworthy?
Oh, a couple of things. There was an economic development amendment that House Bill 348 passed, and that was basically changing the governor's Office of Economic Development, which was interesting. I think they're looking at trying to create a more comprehensive organization with better alignment across the state. So as a Chamber of Commerce, we're really interested in that and figuring out how we can better align with the state goals at the governor's office. Also, a few other things of note. There was an interesting bill, Senate Bill 194, and that was to form a Utah Main Street program, which I think that our businesses on Main Street in particular will be interested in that, to have some additional statewide support for promotion of historic areas, Main Street programs, and maybe some better collaboration and support from the state on that level. And then, of course, we weren't successful, but we worked very hard at the state talking about the PPP loan forgiveness and the tax treatment of the PPP loans. You know, Utah is only, I think, one of four states that's looking at taxing some of the PPP loans. So we are paying close attention to that. It's super complex, and I'd encourage any business who did take out a PPP loan that may be showing a profit this year to talk to their tax advisor about what that means, what that tax implication is for them.
Okay. Let's move on then. Park City Municipal has put out a request. I don't know if it's a proposal or qualifications, but basically they want to do some kind of study or investigation into short-term rentals. Is the chamber working on this with the city?
We are, and we have been, actually. This is basically just an expiration of a current contract that was in place with Park City Municipal, and the county and the chamber has partnered with them on that. And that contract was for 3 years. So it's time to renew that. And, you know, technology has changed so much in the last 3 years. I think the city's just interested in exploring other companies that do the same thing, because there are several companies that help communities get their arms around the short-term rental inventory and compliance issues and licensing issues. And it's just time to go out for renewal of that contract.
Well, it just seemed to me, though, that there was at some point the city was using some kind of software to track short-term, or really it was to track illegal rentals, those who were not paying sales taxes or transient room taxes. And apparently that got shut down, so we had to do something different, and that's what we're doing now.
I'm not familiar with the history there, but that is exactly what this RFP will do. Mm-hmm. It will help us better understand the inventory, and that's particularly what we're interested in, is understanding how many short-term rentals are in the community, where are they, how can, I mean, we would ultimately really like to communicate with those hosts in order to help provide them resources for their guests, whether those are visitor guides or maps. And I mean, part of sustainable tourism is really about influencing visitor behavior once they're in the area. So the more we can touch and communicate and educate our visitors once they're here, whether that's at a hotel or at a visitor center or at a short-term rental, the better visitor behavior I think we can expect.
Yeah. So, I mean, what is it that you do with the information? I mean, get it, if they're not up paying the fees and the taxes, then you would go after them, I guess. But
I think for us, we're more interested in, so I know the city and the county, they look at the regulatory side and getting those businesses licensed and making sure that they're safe and they're following all the rules and regulations. We're interested in better understanding the mix. Where are our visitors staying? What are they doing? How long are they staying? Where? How much are they spending? How can we better influence them to have a more positive impact? How can we mitigate the negative impacts? And how many are there? So when we start looking at occupancy across traditional hotels, we can get an idea of really, truly how many visitors are in the community. And right now, we just don't have a good handle on, I think there are 3,000 short-term rentals in Summit County and Park City together. So we want to understand what is overall that occupancy and what are those impacts.
Well, speaking about occupancy, then, how did we do on the lodging side of things this winter?
Yeah, you know, looking at the winter, you know, we just wrapped up our winter and summer campaign. That'll end just March 28th, so the end of the month here. And, you know, we are pleasantly surprised. I think we got a really slow start to the season. So when we look at December, we were certainly impacted by the combination of rising case rates after the holidays and after Thanksgiving, the lack of snow, the limited terrain. So a lot of challenges in starting the season. And we finished December off about 20%. Which, you know, I never thought as a tourism leader I'd be pleased to say we're only down 20%. But I think overall, the community, the businesses were comfortable with that. You know, of course, we didn't want to get right back to 100% because we couldn't accommodate that many people safely. So it seems like that's a safe, sweet spot. So December, not bad. January really took the biggest hit. Occupancy came in at about 34%, which was down 50% compared to the previous year. And, you know, we expected that mostly because of the loss of Sundance, of such a big hit for us, but also the impacts of the pandemic. And, you know, we did see some strong backfill in February, but still significantly down compared to, you know, what Sundance brings for our community in so many ways. So, December and January, slow start. We are seeing a lot of last-minute bookings through the season, and we're seeing that even accelerate more so for February and March. So we're seeing the late season really performing much better than we had planned, much better than December and January. We're expecting that, you know, February and March will probably be in the mid-30s occupancy, which generally we would be in the mid-40s. So we're still down, you know, 10 to 12%. But, you know, I think overall we can probably expect to finish the winter season down 20 to 30% in that range without really seeing too much of February or, March yet. That's about what we're expecting, which I think is reasonable and is a positive outlook for us for the summer.
Yeah, and when you brought up earlier, you know, when we're talking about sustainable tourism, sounds to me like that's sustainable tourism when you're not jam-packed all the time, or no?
Yeah, it is. It's about balance. I think a lot of what we try to accomplish when we talk about sustainable tourism is balance, and I think the biggest challenge with that, Leslie, is that balance, that definition of balance is different for everyone. You know, what is the sweet spot for a merchant on Main Street is probably different than maybe your definition of the sweet spot or the perfect spot.
Yeah. So let's talk a little bit about summer events, kind of looking ahead. I mean, of course, we're going to have some kind of a mud season here. But are we welcoming people back?
Well, first of all, we're rebranding Mud Season. Mud Season is not a good name for spring. So we're going to call it Spring Blossom Season or something. Help me come up with a good new name for Mud Season. But yeah, we are ready to hit the ground running. In fact, our summer campaign will begin on April 11th. And we understand that the community isn't quite ready. We've been listening in and participating in the city's conversations about events and what we're thinking about community-wide regarding that. So we'll be continuing to listen in and provide input on that. But, you know, events, especially in the group market, groups are a big part of our summer and fall business. And that is one of the slowest markets to return. We are starting to see some groups come back, some weddings and smaller group corporate events. But that will return slowly, and I think that will probably have the biggest impact this summer for us as we're thinking about forecasting for the summer is the decline in the group business.
Yeah, and I guess, are we looking then for that destination visitor again, or are we doing what we did last year, and that's like trying to push that word out to those close at home and those that would drive and spend a couple of nights?
Yeah, definitely the drive market is going to be the focus. I mean, people are starting to get on planes, and we will continue to watch that flight traffic as it comes into Salt Lake. But I think our best bet for short-term quick recovery is looking at active travelers who are already thinking about and researching summer and fall travel. So we're targeting those folks in the Western Drive and really short flight markets. So that's including California, Colorado, Arizona, Montana, you know, those short drive markets. But we will also target in-state overnight guests, but our focus is overnight. We want to get them to spend the night because we know when they do, they stay longer, they spend more, and that's the visitor that we're looking to attract.
Yeah, and of course we've got the statewide mask mandate ending April 10th. Is the chamber, or would the chamber support Summit County in extending that? If that's
we would absolutely support Summit County. We have been from the beginning. We've encouraged our businesses to participate in the Stay Safe to Stay Open campaign, the statewide campaign. Over 300 businesses have signed on to that, and of course masking and social distancing is part of that. We did do a survey. The city and the county were interested in hearing what businesses thought about potentially extending that mask mandate. And we'll release those results today to the public. But overwhelmingly, about 70% of the businesses surveyed, which were about 400 businesses that took the survey, about 70% of them said that they supported the city and or the county extending that mask mandate through May, at which point they feel, as Rich Beulah has shared, most of the employees will be vaccinated, frontline employees. So they really want to protect their employees. And actually, more than 70% of them said that they will continue the mask mandate regardless of the state law or the county law, which it was really impressive.
Yeah, because that's where I was headed to, which is the fact that, you know, welcoming people back and putting them in front of our younger workers who haven't been vaccinated. Putting them at risk. So that's good. That's good to hear.
Yeah, I think, you know, my biggest concern when thinking about visitor experience and, you know, safety is if you have 70% of the businesses who are still requiring the mandate, and then you have 30% that aren't, it's kind of confusing for a visitor and a local to know who is and who isn't, and it's going to make it even harder for our frontline employees to have that conversation and that potential confrontation.
A little bit too late for me, but man, those masks are great sun protectors, right? I mean, look at the Asian women who have been wearing them for a long time anyway. Mm-hmm. Yeah, great skin. Anything else you wanted to mention?
Just a couple of things. I feel so lucky to be part of this amazing community and just privileged to serve it. We talked a little bit about sustainable tourism, and I'm anxious to continue that conversation with you and the community, because one of the major tenets of sustainable tourism is all about connection. So a couple of ways to connect with us, our board of directors election is going to be starting here in the next month. So if we have businesses who are interested in serving in future leadership for our board, start thinking about that. We'll be opening up that application process next month. And that I'm also looking at just creating deeper connections with the community. So look for rail trail walks and Main Street walks and talks and coffee chats, and just opportunities to better connect with the residents and the businesses of Park City. I'm looking forward to that.
Okay. Jennifer, thanks for coming in this morning.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
It's Jennifer Wesselhoff, again, the CEO of the Park City Chamber Bureau. You're listening to the Local News Hour here on KPCW. News time now, 8:33. We've got Jana Dalton from the YSA standing by. Well, joining me now on the phone with an update from the Youth Sports Alliance, I have Jana Dalton, Development Director there for YSA. Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie.
So let's start with the new Play for All recurring giving program. This is something you just kicked off.
Yes, it is. It's something that we launched yesterday. And what it is, it's a monthly giving program. And we developed it to kind of engage new families and donors who maybe just don't want to make as big of a donation right now, but want to help create a community of lasting support and sustainable income. So we're really excited about it. Like I said, it launched yesterday. It's on our website, and donors can give as little as $10 a month up to, as much as they'd like. So again, it's just targeting those younger families, some get out and play, activate families who have participated in our programs, have benefited from our programs, and want to give back.
Yeah, because the programs have been free, yeah?
No. Our programs are not free. We do scholarship about 33% of our participants. There is a small cost to be involved in our programs, but we're looking for ways that families can help scholarship some of those other families.
To make it free for some, yes.
Exactly, okay. Exactly.
All right. And you are also, again, all that information is online and people can just.
It is. It's actually on our homepage right now at YSA Park City. And we encourage you to just take a look at it and, just help us make an impact on the future of YSA.
Okay. You're also hiring. Tell us about this.
We are. We are hiring two new program managers, one for Park City and one for South Summit and Wasatch counties. Both of the positions are part-time with very flexible hours. They'll be working closely with Heather Sims, who was our program manager, helping to coordinate all of our after-school programming, venues, working with coaches, filling in the minor details of our programming. So if you're interested, it's a great position if you're looking for some part-time hours and working with a wonderful team at YSA.
Okay. Again, you can find out more information online as well.
Yes, or you can send your resume to heather@ysaparkcity.org. We are accepting applications right now.
Okay. Let's talk about some of the local athletes with YSA connections who have had a stellar season.
Yes, we're very excited. Our YSA Nation athletes have had a tremendous season in an ever-challenging year. Casey Dawson just set a new U.S. record at the 3,000 meters a few weeks ago. He actually started in our Get Out and Play program, so we're so proud of him. We're so excited for his success. He won gold at the 10,000 meters at U.S. Speed Skating Long Track Championships at the beginning of the month as well. So he's having just a tremendous year. Josie Johnson just won USA Nordic Junior Championships in Steamboat Springs in the U16 division. She also got her start with Nordic in Get Out and Play. And so we're so proud of her and very excited for her success. A couple other athletes who did really well at that competition who also were part of our Get Out and Play alums are Sam Masuga and Jillian Highfill. So big success for those athletes. And then lastly, Sydney Palmer-Ledger, who was one of our Dare to Dream scholarship recipients early on in her career, who's now skiing for the University of Utah, won the 5K Classic and the 15K cross-country races at NCAA Ski Championships, which helped get the U of U their NCAA championship title. So again, these are amazing athletes who got their start in our programming, and we're so proud of their success.
Yeah. What's the Dare to Dream scholarship?
That is our Stein Erickson Endowment Scholarship that athletes can apply for in the fall. It's a need-based scholarship, so it'll be opening up back again in the fall for athletes in need of financial assistance.
Okay. Anything else you wanted to mention?
I just want to thank the community. It's been a challenging year, and our community has really stepped up in many ways, and we're so appreciative of their support. And we're encouraging some of the new families that have moved into town to try our programming, get involved, and Play for All, which is our new monthly giving program, is a great way to get involved in helping us and create, big impact in our programming. So just wanted to say thank you, and we appreciate the community and all of our partners. So.
Okay. Jana Dalton is the Development Director for U Sports Alliance. Thanks for your time this morning.
Thank you, Leslie.
Well, the majority landowner and namesake of Garf Ranches has let KPCW know that they have no plans to change the current use of their land. In a story we broadcast last week, we reported on a proposal by a Utah developer to incorporate 17,000 acres of land between Park City and Camas into a new city called Garf Ranch, Utah. The executive summary and strategic plan that were emailed to KPCW called for a town center, both urban and suburban villages, as well as rural and mountain estate lots. The property is currently zoned for one unit per 80 acres. A developer's representative told KPCW that the documents were outdated and meant for internal use only. On Wednesday, a statement signed by Ben Rogers, a representative for Garf Rogers Ranch and the Rogers family, and John Garf, a representative for the Garf family, was emailed to KPCW saying that they wanted to issue the statement because of the, quote, misinformation. The statement says that Garf Rogers Ranch LLC owns over 4,000 acres that have been proposed to be part of this new Garf Ranch city. Additionally, the Garf and Rogers families separately own many hundreds of acres that are also proposed to be part of the project. Further, the statement says that the landowners have not had any discussions with the developers, and using the Garf name was never discussed nor approved by the Garf family. The statement continues, quote, while this proposal is bold and optimistic, we do not appreciate the unilateral and presumptive approach this developer has taken, nor have we agreed to contribute our property or participate in this property, end quote. The statement also says that the families value their relationship with neighbors and local government officials, and they have no plans at this time to change the current use of their property. The developer, Anderson Development, said that they are not talking to the media about the proposal at this point. KPCW News Time now, 8:40. Well, as people continue to see financial hardships with the ongoing pandemic, Utah has a new rental assistance program that is helping to make ends meet. KPCW's Jessica Lowell explains where that funding's coming from.
Utah received $215 million in federal funds to help renters through the pandemic. The Department of Workforce Services has set up an online application to offer tenants rental relief. The state funded a similar program last year, offering nearly $25 million in rental assistance through December of 2020. Lance Soaf with the department says people from all corners of the state applied to the program. He says despite steady economic recovery, there are still people in need of assistance.
So Utah is in a good spot. I mean, we are at a 3.1% unemployment rate. Need in our state is less than others, but it is still very apparent that the need to cover rent is big.
The program will pay for up to 3 months of lease, and it can also cover past due rent for 3 to 6 months, along with security deposits and utilities. Soaf says the program isn't only targeted towards renters, but can also help landlords.
It's for both sides. So there's been an eviction moratorium in place where renters could stay if they couldn't pay, and the landlords didn't have the ability to evict them based on non-payment. The main point of it is to create housing stability during the pandemic. But at the same time, it's here to support the landlords that didn't have the ability to pay their own bills because there was an eviction moratorium.
If renters are unable to fill out the online form, landlords can complete it for them. Qualifying renters include those who make at or below 80% of the area median income or people who have experienced a reduction in income. To apply, renters can visit rentrelief.utah.gov. Jessica Lowell, KPCW News.
And joining me now on the phone with some big news from Park City Film, I have Executive Director Katie Wang. Good morning, Katie.
Good morning, Leslie.
So you are reopening?
Yes, we are excited to announce that we'll be reopening it to the public on April 16th. So just in time to showcase some of the Academy Award Best Picture nominees and arguably some of the best films of the year. So could not be more excited. It's been a long time.
Yeah, well, you've been doing, I mean, you've had some smaller gatherings where people are rented out the theater and did some member screenings. So how is this going to be different from what you've been doing?
Well, we've had a great response to those. We're sold out with all of our private screenings through the rest of this month and into April. And really what we're seeing is people are excited. We weren't sure if people would be excited to come back, but I think with the recent decline in COVID cases and the increase in vaccine availability, you know, people are getting more comfortable with being inside with groups of people that they don't know. That was really the impetus for doing the private screenings, because then you'd have a group of folks that you were familiar with or related to, you know, as groups of 30 people. Now, when we open up to the public, of course, with all of our COVID protocols in place, mandatory masks, 6 feet of distancing, you know, it's a huge theater in the Jim Santee Auditorium. It's 446 seats. So with 6 feet of distancing, we're at 14% capacity, but that's still 65 people. So basically the difference would be just the number of people that are able to come in and the ability to show some of these films that have been nominated for Best Picture that, you know, we really could only get if we were doing a theatrical experience for them, you know, as the filmmakers intended. So it gives us more breadth in our programming, certainly, and the opportunity to serve more community members, and then also offer some free screenings. We're partnering with Connect Summit County and with Recycle Utah on a couple of screenings in April and May. And so that's, you know, that's really core to our mission and something we're incredibly excited to be able to bring back and bring our community together around the art of cinema, but also the stories that are told and the conversations that they inspire.
Yeah, so you're more than doubling what you have been doing, again, going from 30 to up to 65. How do those 65, I mean, do they have to purchase a ticket in advance or...
Yep. So we're setting that up right now. Next week, we'll have our website fully launched, we hope, with all the details on the films, but then also a reservation system, which we haven't had in the past. I think most people who've come to Park City Film are, you know, used to just cruising up to the box office and buying the film. Now we're really going to require that people buy them in advance. You can reserve specific seats. So all those front row people, there's a, I think, six seats in the front row that you can select from. Certainly ADA accessible seats will be available. But then you can choose kind of where you like to sit in the theater. And then, of course, maintaining that distance. If someone has a larger group, seat groupings are the largest group is a group of four, then you'd have to split up into smaller groups. But we're just trying to accommodate people, but of course, be safe at the same time.
Okay. And then what about people who have their punch cards? Are those going to be available or it'll have to just be cash to reserve that?
Those will be available. That's part of what we're working on now with the back-end system, that because we're going to a reservation system, which we haven't had before, some people also have free film passes. How do we accommodate those? So that's why we're announcing it a month early, to give us a little time to work out some of those details. And we're also taking the opportunity to change some of our operations. We've been hearing for years that people have said, oh, could you start a little earlier? Eight's so late. So 7 o'clock is the nationally preferred movie time when you do surveys of national theater going audiences. So we're going to change Friday and Saturday nights to 7 o'clock screenings and keep our Sunday night screening at 6 o'clock and just see how people like it. You know, everything's kind of topsy-turvy this year, so why not take the opportunity to make a change and get people in a little bit earlier, and they can, you know, get dinner and a movie, get some early bird dinners, and then come see a great film with us.
Okay, but the hours would be, I mean, the days, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, you're going to stick with just that, except for the Thursday nights that you, where you do the free screenings?
Yes, yep, exactly. So that will not change. We can't bring back our Saturday matinees, which we've been doing in partnership with the Park City Library with our Books to Movies and Foreign Cinema for Kids. Those programs are on hold until the fall. Hopefully we'll be able to bring those back. So, you know, kind of slowly, you know, dipping our toes into the water with the private screenings and getting a little bit deeper now with the public screenings. But, you know, absolutely making sure that it's a safe environment. And just as, you know, an interview you did earlier, you know, mask mandates are, regardless of what the state does, we will still require masks in our space. And of course, social distancing while people are in their seats, which allows them, of course, to eat popcorn and have some candy and drinks.
Okay. So what are you going to kick off with then on April 16th?
Really excited about some of these films. These are, as I said, Academy Award nominated films and also some favorites from some recent Sundance Film Festival. So the opening weekend film on April 16th will be Minari. It's been nominated for 6 Academy Awards, including Best Picture, and it won the 2020 Sundance Film Festival Grand Jury Prize, as well as the Audience Award. And it's just a stunning film about a Korean-American family that moves to a farm in Arkansas in pursuit of the American dream. And it's just a story about resilience and family and what defines that place we all call home. Just one of my favorite films from the last year. So I'm really pleased that we were able to get that as our opening weekend film. Then on April 22nd, which is Earth Day, we'll be partnering with Recycle Utah. And this will be a free screening of a film, a documentary called Seeding Change. And it's about social entrepreneurship. And it highlights companies that are using their businesses to address environmental and social issues. And we're just now in the process of curating a panel of local business leaders for discussion after the film. Again, kind of the heart of what we do, bring those conversations back in our community and highlight the great work being done here locally. Then we follow that with Judas and the Black Messiah. Judas was nominated for 5 Academy Awards, and it's actually making history for being the first Best Picture nominee with all Black producers. So that's exciting. Premiered at the Sundance Film Festival this past year, or in 2021. And it's a story about the life and assassination of Black Panther leader Fred Hampton. Really intense, powerful film. Then we have The Father, which was nominated for 6 Academy Awards, starring Anthony Hopkins and Olivia Colman. It's a story about aging and the toll that dementia can take on a person and their family members. May will be working with Connect Summit County for Mental Health Awareness Month on a film screening. And then finally, kind of the last of what we've programmed out, The Truffle Hunters, which was at Sundance in 2020, which charmed audiences. We heard so many people saying how much they love this film. And it's a story about elderly Italian men and their dogs who hunt for truffles in the forests of northern Italy. So as I said, we'll have more tickets, more information and ticketing starting next week at parkcityfilm.org. So just really excited to be coming back and hope the community will respond in kind and get their tickets early and often, as I say.
Yeah. And certainly, traditionally, you've just kind of gone fall through spring. Any plans to try and stay open this summer to try and kind of make up where you missed out last year?
Well, the Twilight Drive-In last year was a huge success, something that we, you know, kind of got into with Utah Olympic Park and Dragonfly Media Technologies, not really knowing, you know, how it would go. And it was, you know, people loved it and came back, and we were able to extend the season right through the fall. So we're in conversations right now about bringing that back. So we will close the Santee down since we can't really do both, and bring back the Twilight Drive-In, hopefully starting in June. So kind of have more details on that, but just excited to be able to work with some more community partners and get people out in the outdoors watching movies.
Okay, anything else you wanted to mention?
I just want to thank the community for this past year. It's a 1-year anniversary, you know, of our COVID closure, and just the support that we've received, the notes of encouragement, donations, memberships, all of that has been tremendous. You know, to kind of lifting our spirits and enabling us to open strong the way we will be in the next month here. And then just also our major grantors, the Utah Legislature, Utah Division of Arts and Museums, Summit County Rap Tax, and then the CARES funding we received from both Park City Municipal and Summit County has been instrumental to our ability to weather this storm. So thank you, everyone, and we look forward to seeing you back in the theater.
Okay, good news. Thanks, Katie.
Thank you.
It's Katie Wang, Executive Director of Park City Film. You're listening to KPCW Park City. Again, stay tuned. Coming up on Cool Science Radio this morning at right after NPR News at 9:06. Today's guests include Neil deGrasse Tyson. He has written the book Cosmic Queries, Star Talk's Guide to Who We Are, How We Got Here, and Where We're Going, building on the wisdom of the ancients and explaining the most significant science of today, Tyson taking readers on a journey from past to future, punctuated with images portraying not only the universe, but also the key ideas that help us to understand it. Then, a conversation with Jeff Hawkins. He's written the book, 1,000 Brains, A New Theory of Intelligence. He shares a groundbreaking new theory on intelligence, showing how the brain uses map-like structures to build a model of the world, not just one model, but hundreds of thousands, which then vote together to reach a consensus. All of that coming up on today's edition of Cool Science Radio, again, right after the local news hour and NPR News at 9:06. Well, the Central Wasatch Commission will host a second Mountain Transportation System Summit tomorrow from 9 a.m. to noon. This will be the final Mountain Transportation System Summit before the Commission recommends a Mountain Transportation System. The public is invited to attend the summit virtually, at which the commissioners will continue to work towards a consensus recommendation for this regional mountain system. Pre-registration is required. You can find that at cwc.utah.gov. Back in 2019, the Commission hosted an expert panel in which they discussed the major transportation alternatives under consideration through the initiative, including expansion of the mountain bus service, an aerial and gondola system, and a rail system. Potential impacts on the watershed correlated with respective modes and alternatives were addressed. The CWC held a public comment period just over a year ago, and more than 1,200 comments were received from some 366 individuals on the scope, the goals, and the attributes of the mountain transportation system. This winter, the board has hosted 4 online education sessions specific to each of the transportation modes outlined in the MTS Draft Alternatives Report. A draft matrix with staff evaluations and scores is online at, again, cwc.utah.gov. The intended outcome of the Mountain Transportation System is a consensus recommendation for transportation modes for a regional mountain transportation system serving the Wasatch Front and the back. Well, the Heber City Council voted 3-1 to adopt the North Village Overlay Zone. Council members Mike Johnston, Wayne Hardman, and Ryan Stack all voted to approve the new zoning guidelines. In the past year, the council's received public input opposing the new zone ordinance approval. KPCW's Carolyn Murray has more.
Before the vote, the council addressed ongoing concerns about the North Village Overlay Zone, referred to as the NVOS. Multiple iterations of the document have come to the city council for discussion in the past year. The public has participated through Zoom meetings, and they've provided extensive input to the council and planning departments. Most have been in opposition to adopting the new zoning ordinance. Councilmember Mike Johnston made the motion to approve the NVOS.
We've had 18 public hearings, public meetings, and at least 4, maybe 5 public hearings this past year and a half. This has not been a rush process. This does not violate the MOU with the county in any way. This does not annex any property. This does not give any support to the current North Village Resort plan, which none of us like. I feel this is an exceptional zoning code, much better than Heber City has ever done before. I believe it's even much better than the county current zoning code in this area.
Johnston said it's time to move forward rather than going backward.
The city staff has worked hard on this for a year and a half. They recommend this. The Planning Commission has recommended this. Our hired professional consultants have recommended this, and I recommend this too.
Heber City Council member Heidi Franco was the dissenting vote. Council member Rachel Kaler was not in attendance when they voted. She was attending remotely and lost connection. Heber City Manager Matt Brower said adopting the NVOS would clarify the land use for the area north of Heber City, which is currently under county jurisdiction.
And simply put, the North Village Overlay Zone is an ordinance. It's a land use ordinance. In every area in the city, every area within the city's jurisdiction, as a land use ordinance. The other question is, what happens when the city adopts the NVOZ? And to be quite frank, nothing. Nothing until 2 additional things happen. One is that the city council approves a annexation petition, and 2, negotiates what's called an MDA, or a master development agreement, with the developers.
Brower said Heber City has received 4 petitions for annexation, but has not responded to them due to the need to establish the NVOS first. He said code can be changed and expects that to happen because the planners can't anticipate everything in advance. The public has weighed in with concerns about traffic, entitlements, and the environment, including how water quality would be affected.
Does the city have ordinances that will protect the environment? And yes, we do. And in fact, the council has been discussing many of these ordinances over the last 6 months to a year. And in fact, many elements that would further protect the environment have been included in the NVOZ zone, such as protection of environmentally sensitive areas.
The North Village Overlay Zone refers to the area east of Highway 40, north of the intersection with Highway 32, west of the Wasatch Canal, and north of Coyote Lane. Carolyn Murray, KPCW News.
It's All Songs Considered from NPR Music. I'm Bob Boylan.
And I'm Robin Hilton.
We love music, all kinds, and every week we literally go through hundreds of songs just to find the best new music out there.
Tunes from emerging bands and musical icons, too. If it's new and good, we'll play it and talk about it, too.
Check out the show right here on this station.
That's All Songs Considered from NPR Music.
Tune in to All Songs Considered, heard here every Sunday night on KPCW, starting at 6 p.m.
Well, Park City's Transit Spring service will start up on April 11th, but the city reports that it will be very similar to the current schedule. This month's meeting of the Joint Transportation Advisory Board, or JTAB, got a preview of the spring schedule from Transportation Service Planner Scott Birmingham. He said the significant reductions will be stopping the 4 Orange Line to Silver Lake at Deer Valley and the 9 Purple to Empire Pass. They will also cut back on the early hours and late hours of the citywide bus. And he said on the 6 Line connecting Ecker Hill to Deer Valley, the frequency will be changed from 15 to 30 minutes, but Birmingham says they are retaining several elements of service, such as the Yellow Line for Bonanza Drive and Prospector Avenue. Again, that spring service set to begin April 11th, the day the resorts close. Well, Utah saw a slight uptick in new cases week over week. KPCW's Jessica Lowell has the latest on the COVID-19 numbers here in Summit and Wasatch County.
Utah saw just under 700 new COVID-19 cases Wednesday, which is about 40 more cases than the state saw at the same time last week. Despite the uptick in cases, the 7-day rolling average is at 499 new cases per day. In the Wasatch Back, Summit County reported 18 new cases, which is the same amount of cases the county saw last Wednesday. Wasatch County reported 4 new cases, which is up from last Wednesday when the county saw 2. There were close to 8,700 people tested for the first time statewide, with around 20,000 total tests administered. The 7-day rolling average for test-over-test positivity is about 4%, while the average percent positivity for people-over-people is around 8%. Utah's Department of Health reported 5 new deaths, but noted that 4 of the deaths happened before February 17th. To date, more than 2,000 Utahns have died due to COVID-19, including 11 from Summit County and 20 from Wasatch County. There were almost 28,000 doses of the COVID-19 vaccine administered since Tuesday, bringing the total number close to 1,055,000 doses administered. Jessica Lowell, KPCW News.
32 degrees here in Old Town Park City. Again, looking for partly sunny skies. Looks pretty sunny out there right now. Looking for a high today up to 46. Few clouds tonight, 32, sunny, and 51 on Friday, with more snow now forecast for Friday into Saturday and even Sunday. This is KPCW Park City.